It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. I'm Ben Ostro, joined by Mark Schultz and Chris Soyberg. So a lot of different things that we saw this week, week nine. So nothing of too terrible significance, but we'll kind of like hit a bunch of them. We'll kind of like spin the wheel of topics, I guess. And the first one that kind of caught my eye that was a little unusual because it's something fairly new, but not necessarily new just to the NFL, but we were seeing this at lower levels, which is this holding technique. Then we saw two holds called on consecutive downs against the Bills. And the episode page for this podcast will have the video of those plays. But the first one in particular, you had a defender that kind of looked like it lost his feet, and they called a hold on it.
This is a very tricky call to get. Once the ball is snapped, the offensive player gets a little bit of a fistful of jersey of the defensive player and pulls, again, gently, not overtly, the defender toward him. That upsets the defender's balance, the defender's center of gravity. Once that happens, the offensive player yanks the defensive player down to the ground. That is holding. It looks like 90% of the time, the defender lost his balance and just fell down. But it's actually holding. I haven't seen it at the high school level, but I am sure it's coming. And I'm sure the defender will jump up and yell and say, "He was holding me, he was holding me." And I'll say, "He just fell down. What's the deal?" But that's a new technique on the offense. That is illegal. We have to be looking for that at all levels. And good job, Carl Paganelli, to pick it up.
Yeah, this, like Mark said, this is hard to get because we're taught to look for sort of indicators on holding, right? Like hands outside of the frame or bad feet. And this is all done kind of not that way, right? The hands are sort of inside the frame still, so nothing is raising an eyebrow from an official, so to say, until you see that downward motion of the pull and bringing the defender down. And there are 22 players, so our eyes can't be everywhere. So if we don't see one of the indicators, we may move off that block, and that's typically when that hold will happen. Interestingly enough, I was reviewing one of my tapes from last week's game, just at the high school level, and we had one we did miss because it was a long hole, a long play, but it was kind of a bad version of that, where the offensive player just got kind of frustrated with blocking for so long and just finally just pulled the guy down. But again, our umpire had moved off of that, and as had I as the referee. Again, it is hard to get, but it is good when they do get that. And it is, as Mark said, it is definitely a hold.
And it's one of the things where we put it out there that, you know, hey, this is what it actually is. And then the fan response, well, you know, from the side that gets penalized, the team that gets penalized, that fan base is coming out and is like, "Oh, he slipped. You know, oh, that's a little bit technical," but that's it by design. It's supposed to be given the appearance that it's, "Oh, he just lost his feet." You know, that there's a whole host of things that are intended to pass under the radar, whether it be a trip, whether it be some sort of sneaky tug on a defensive pass interference. All of these things are meant to be in there to just kind of not be detected and just gain that half an ounce of an advantage there. I'll be honest, I looked at it at first and I'm like, hands inside the frame? You know, there's no wrap, there's no real tug that we see, no fistful of jersey. But there was just enough to, first of all, get him off of his center of gravity. Now you can put a downward force, which of course is legal, and we see that all the time where there's the famous clip of of Ed Hockley making an announcement saying there was no offensive holding on the play. The defender was overpowered. There is no door where the defender can crawl into and hide from that announcement. But that is the sort of thing where it had the signatures of a hold. Somebody else came in and said, I had a better look at it, and I saw that it was, you know, that he just was overpowered and he went down. There was more of a, you know, a downward motion on it that was still legal. But in this case, it's part of this 1-2 maneuver that deliberately does what it can to put that opponent on the ground. Good call in real time, because looking at it a couple of times on replay, I was still not convinced. And it was actually Cam Philippe who did point that out and said that they actually put that on their training tape for their associate. That was quite interesting. Unfortunately, we followed it up on the next play. There was a second hold, which brought up a first and 30, and it did nullify a touchdown. That one wasn't there, and you know that's the one that's going to be one more talked about. But specifically that tactic, that's interesting. And so it's one of those things, you put a pin on that. I think that's something we're going to be seeing in the coming weeks. Let's kind of jump around, and we also saw an unusual fumble. The old ground can't cause a fumble, except when it can. Saquon Barkley for the Eagles, those Giants fans that just cringed at that. He was going to the ground, went to the ground, hit the ground, ball comes out, Jaguars recover, return it for a touchdown. Officials let the play out, then we go into replay. Now, replay took a look at this and overturned it to, or no, they didn't overturn it. We fully expected it to be overturned, and they stayed with the touchdown. So what did you see when you saw the replay?
So this is one of those situations where the call on the field, you know, letting it play out on the field, they may have thought, hey, he was down by contact. But again, with replay, they default to letting the play out. And unfortunately, they didn't have clear and obvious evidence that he was down by contact. Because again, unlike school and college, where as soon as your knee or something else hits the ground, you are down. In the NFL, you do need to be down by contact. And if he maintained his balance after the initial contact, and then it was ruled that he went down on his own, the ground can then cause a fumble. And again, because they defaulted to letting it play out, the call on the field was the fumble. And without enough evidence to overturn it, they had to stick with that call.
That was a close one. And I think it turned out all right. They said that there was contact by the Jaguars. And again, not enough to put him on the ground. But then I think, did he step on the foot of his teammate? And that's not down by contact. That's bumping into your teammate. And then he fell down and the ball came out. Like Chris said, there was no clear and obvious evidence to overturn. So whatever the officials were going to call on the field was going to be the call.
And in this case, you do have a situation where instinctually you look at what had happened. You're like, oh, okay, this is down by contact. But we're not necessarily trying to prove that or just isolate that. We're looking at, is there something that we can overturn? So that's the standard of replay. Replay's not in there to prove the down by contact necessarily, but just that, can we get off of the call on the field? Let's go into, and we don't see this at the lower levels. They pretty much seal that off by the fact that once the knee's down, play is dead. But in the NFL, there must be that defensive contact element. For example, quarterback just gets brushed at the 15-yard line, and then they stumble forward a few yards, and they may land at the 8. It's still down by contact, but same situation, but instead the quarterback stays on his feet and then loses his footing. That's doing it on his own. So there's no way to really write that in. It's just, did the contact precede the player going down? And in this case, it was defensive contact, then there was contact with the foot of the teammate, And so now you, you put this into this area. Well, it could be this and it could be that. And so now replay does not have the tool to overturn because there is an either or in there. It is the conundrum that you bring up, Chris, is that letting the play out, if it's a case where the, you know, in this situation where you have dueling possibilities and therefore they just go with the stands, or we instinctively have a fumble in some other situation, but we just don't have a good angle at it. All of these things combine to, well, you kind of just default to the call on the field. But there's that caveat that it's like, but we want you to lean towards letting the play go, whether it be an incomplete pass, whether it be a fumble and a possible down by contact, let the play out. We saw the same thing happen in the Giants-Commanders game. There was an incomplete pass ruled on the field, but it was definitely an empty hand fumble. So they blew it dead. They were at least able to give the Commanders possession, but there was no run back.
This is one of the things that is the beauty of the NFL. With replay, you can go back and you can correct some of these things. I don't think there's ever going to be a down by contact, if you can put the knee down and get up and go again in high school, simply because these bang bang calls with five officials, not seven or eight, it's just too hard. In high school, when we have the knee down, he's down and it's done. Same thing too, even in many levels of college. You don't have 16 cameras at a D3 school. So I don't think we'll ever get a down by contact rule in high school or college.
You want to jump in on the uniform situation we saw this weekend?
Chris, have you ever packed the wrong uniform?
That's always a worry of mine, is that I show up with either the wrong sleeve length or definitely comes up.
Well, Alan Eck, the referee this week, before he became a referee, he was an umpire. Still kept number 76, but instead of U on his back, he now has an R. Well, he apparently grabbed the wrong long sleeve shirt, and it was his umpire long sleeve shirt, and he wore it in the game. The world did not slip off of its axis, but many an official had to smile and chuckle and have sympathy for Alan Eck, because there have been many times where, you know, my shoes are at a different area in my bag underneath a towel, and for like 5 seconds I'm gripped with overwhelming terror that I don't have my shoes to officiate the game. And I've had a couple reoccurring dreams that the game is starting and I'm not dressed and I can't find my stuff. So, Alan, we've all been there, and you did fine.
And when there's travel added into it, first of all, you're packing for another city. We kind of surmised that he packed long sleeves. He also had probably rain gear just in case, even though it's been very dry in the Northeast. The time that you don't pack it is the time that you need it. Pulled his gear out of the closet and went a little bit too deep to grab that one. And we've seen certain things pop up. I think someone was without a jersey for whatever reason, whether or not it was a luggage snafu or whatever. All of a sudden, we see a number that is very high on the field, and it's from the development roster. And somebody lived near the stadium, and so the wife of the official nearby was able to zip over to the stadium with the old development jersey, and somebody had something. I think there was something about Jack Fetty.
Yes, Jack Fetty, in the book The Third Team, there's a story that, this is back in the knicker days, he forgot his knickers. And first of all, he thought the crew was pulling a prank on him. He said, no, it's no prank. He forgot his knickers. Well, Jack Fetty is not a small man. He is not an average built man. He was a large man. And they were looking for a pair of pants. They looked for the home team or the visiting team's white NFL pants. Well, they were all too small for him. Finally, they were able to find a pair of gray sweatpants that they turned inside out to have the white fluff showing on the outside, and they cinched him up, and he worked the game. Basically, you didn't talk to Jack Fetty about him forgetting his knickers because he was not amused that he forgot that, and he was not amused that he had to, as one official said, look like little Bo Peep going out on the field.
And I think that somebody made a remark from the stands, and we're cutting out the off-color response that came, which was trademark Jack Fetty as well.
Basically, I got your little Bo Peep right here.
We also saw that for the first time, we saw a situation where, and I'm going to kind of broaden this topic out into ground rules, because we see that in baseball, but we don't see it in football. And in the NFL, there's only one ground rule that exists, and it revolves around the retractable roofs and any stadiums that have a wall that opens up. There has to be some rules governing when those open, when they close, and basically it's a pregame decision, open or close, and whatever it is, you stick with it. You don't change it. But roof is open and it starts raining, then you do have to close it. And then there's certain things about, well, you can't do it inside 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, and you know, basically a bunch of procedures for the referee to follow. So in this case, the Cardinals, blue sky at the beginning of the game, the network showed an open stadium, and you saw the blue skies that all of a sudden turned gray at the end of the first quarter, and rain and hail came in. So then that led to them to try to quickly close the roof. Took about 10 minutes, which just allowed the rain to pass. But at that point, once that roof is closed, that's it. So let me kind of use that topic to feed out to situations where, you know, you got a field, you know, not all fields are alike. Some of them seemingly get painted once a decade, or at least that's the way it looks, or other things. So anything from high school that you see something where you just had to make a ground rule at that particular situation before the game?
This was an interesting year. I worked at three high schools that did not have individual yard markers. They were natural grass fields, but they just had the big stripes. And you just kind of have to eyeball where your wing's foot is, and you have to put it down, and you have to eyeball the chains. And it's like, okay, well, you might have to have a measurement tonight, and it's hard to do, but every once in a while you run into that. There was one time that I saw the sideline painted, and I think the person who painted the sideline needed a field sobriety test afterwards. But those, you just kind of have to, Chris, you just pretty much have to roll with it.
Yeah, we get spoiled a little bit by field turf fields, right? I mean, those are pristine. Yeah, every yard marker is there. You rarely, if ever, have a measurement, and I had a similar sort of story back in, I think it's a couple of years ago, for playoffs. We were in the middle of nowhere Michigan, right? And it was a rainy day. It was a November day in Michigan, and as those in Michigan know, you can have every season basically in that day. And it was a mud-filled bowl of insanity where actually the field was crooked. So they had the yard markers on the sides, but the field was angled. So the 10 didn't necessarily match up with the 10-yard line itself. And I was the umpire on that game. And besides almost losing my shoe a few times in the mud and losing a beanbag in the mud, you know, it was insanity, but it was pure American football. And we all said that after the fact, is that that is just the purest form of American football, where everyone loves the weather, loves the mud. And it was great. And it was fun, but it was a different set of challenges for the officiating. That's for sure.
And I want to kind of wrap up with something that personal for me and related to what you were talking about with measurements and stuff like that. You know, I've been doing the blog for 16 seasons now. I have three kids. Oldest is 27. He wasn't too terribly interested in his high school football. And same thing with the middle one. But the younger one is getting involved in band. So We wound up going to a middle school game, partially attended by basically the band parents and the parents of the players. And yeah, there came the announcement, hey, we need somebody to run the chains. Well, I'm sitting in the stands. They're asking for me. They're calling for me. They sent up the bat signal, which is what my daughter actually said. Well, you think you're Batman? And he's like, yeah, no, they need me. For the first time ever, I got to work the chains on the sideline. You know, studying everything from writing the blog, I knew what to anticipate. You know, stay in position until waved down. There was one situation where I was waved down, and then the white hat's like, get back, and you don't explain yourself. You just do as you're told. So I got to work the down box because the two others I was working with were, I don't want to do the down box, and the other one was, I don't know what I'm doing. So it was quite fun. We got through the whole night with just a bent pole on the line to gain stake in the fourth quarter. But it was a lot of fun. And I encourage people that are interested in officiating, you want to take that step. Yeah, you can't talk to the officials during the game, but be on the sideline and kind of see how things are and then see if you can strike up a conversation at halftime or at the end of the game. You know, obviously I told the wing official there about the blog. So once we got into the last 2 minutes of the game, yeah, he started asking me some questions, and it was just a really fascinating thing.
And a good chain crew is invaluable. It is amazing how well a game can go off, or go off the rails if it's a bad chain crew. Yeah, our best games are when we walk up and our last scrimmage officials obviously talk to them pregame, and they're like, oh yeah, we've been doing this for 30 years. And you can tell. They know exactly when to stay. They know exactly when to go. And that makes, especially when you're working with five mark, or you know, if you're lucky enough to work with seven, that just is one thing off the minds of all the officials is, hey, the line to gain will be right. The down box will be right. I can worry about everything else. So kudos to you, Ben.
We love a good chain crew.
So yeah, to that end, I didn't even think about it at the time that really helps. And some of the comments when I posted the picture on our socials, a lot of people said, yeah, when you have to babysit the crew, yeah, you're missing formations, the offside, because you're constantly having to look back. And yeah, there was one time where there was a 35 yard or so pass downfield, and I'm holding, and I'm like waiting. I'm like, there's no flag, but I didn't get the signal. Then it came the signal, and I just hauled downfield and put that stake down right where the heel was. And then I got, just before the snap, I got a good hustle. I was like, but then it, yes, exactly. It was one of those moments where you're like, okay, you know, I was like, that's, but then afterwards, kind of understanding that they don't necessarily get that stake there quite in time. And yeah, you just kind of, you deal with it. You work around the situation, but yeah, that pole was there right on time for the snap. The chains came later, but that was quite fun. Yeah, I definitely encourage it. Something that, you know, maybe don't wait for the announcement to come over the loudspeaker. Just kind of check down at the sideline. Hey, you good on the chain crew? And I definitely recommend it. And even better, it's the best seat in the house. So with that wraps up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. We drop a new episode every Tuesday throughout the season. We're going to actually take a little bit of a hiatus right after Thanksgiving as the bowl season kind of percolates. But every Tuesday you can catch the podcast here. And hey, it's 25 minutes. It fits right into your lunch break there. If you're listening on the Football Zebras website, you can also find us on your preferred podcasting app, where you can subscribe, like, rate us 5 stars, everything down there. Many thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.